Well, we have a few loyal audience here. Again, without further ado, yes, John? 我很高兴哈。 John呢继续给我们介绍浅谈美国文化 American Culture 101。
Hello again. Yes, I believe so. Great. Okay. So, last week I mentioned to Pastor that I was excited about baseball season starting.
So am I. Yes.
Okay. So, as the two some of the two white guys in the room.
No, we're European.
Okay, the two guys of European descent in the room. We are very excited about baseball season starting. So I thought that it would be a good idea to mention this, and Pastor actually thought it would be a good idea to present a little bit about baseball. So I was very excited to say yes to that proposal. Last week's talk, which I gave about American culture, was more critical about American culture, and had some aspects of critique and criticism. The topics which we talked about last week will actually return a little bit in this week about baseball, but they'll be in a different form because I'm unabashedly excited about baseball. I'm so excited that I even wore a baseball jacket for you today. I couldn't even help it. I was, In fact, this is I bought a new White Sox jacket, which I'm wearing today. I'll get to that a little bit later about how there are two different teams here in Chicago. But I'm just curious, any baseball fans? Any fans? Okay. Great. Mark and I. Okay. So I think that you will actually hear a little bit about baseball, which you can, if you were interested last week in some of the criticisms about American culture or some of the thoughts and insights, hopefully. You might have insights that are connected to today also. So, baseball is a national game in the United States. It's also known as an American tradition. It's also known as part of our American heritage. And even it's referred to as an American heirloom, as a tradition which is passed down from family member to family member as part of being an American. It is also a pastoral game. So I was talking last week about the wilderness and about the frontier and about the American idea about nature and how nature is somewhere outside and we have to sort of push further and further in the United States this idea of a frontier imagination. So baseball is part of also that same imagination about the frontier and nature and the landscape. It's a pastoral game. So it's a game that's set in the pasture, in the landscape, in the green out of doors. It's important that it is natural, that it has fresh air, also that the bats and the balls and the gloves are handmade, not machine-made, although that's changed. But this was part of the idea when it was invented, that it was a natural game, part of nature. And it happened in the cities. But what happened also is that people who were in the first cities in the United States went outside of those cities into what they considered to be nature, into the pastures to play this game. And so this game grew up in that way, played by people from cities who would leave the city itself and go out into the nature and play this game there in the nature. It has other aspects that I love, like hot dogs. Another strangely American phenomenon, the hot dog, or the frankfurter, or the Vienna sausage. Those, the Vienna sausage or the frankfurter, have German or Austrian roots, but the hot dog is American, supposedly. And also the history of the hot dog is tied to the history of baseball, very closely tied to the history of baseball. So you have hot dogs when you watch baseball games. And I'm also looking forward to hot dogs. It's a ritual sport that has a lot of familiarity to all of us in the United States. We're very familiar with it as a ritual. It's also a superstitious sport where the players have very strong superstitions about what it is that makes them either a winning team or, in some cases, Mark, a losing team. So I'll discuss that very very important losing team here in Chicago. Yes, we'll talk about that. But players have things that they do which they hope will help them to win. And also it's a seasonal sport. It's a sport which arrives in the spring and occurs over the course of the warm weather in the spring and in the summer. And it's a sport which we see the conclusion of, the seasonal conclusion of, in the fall or in the autumn. So it's also a way of telling time. It's a way of knowing that spring has come back. And in the United States, in America, it's very close to our cultural identity to feel a sense of excitement, to look forward to spring coming and to baseball season. And then you know that summer is here when it's time to play baseball. So the 2012 Major League Baseball season begins in only a few days, March 28th. and, yeah, right, it's cause for excitement. And the World Series already, it feels odd to even start to talk about the World Series before the regular season starts, but the World Series begins October 24th, and hopefully is going to schedule to end no later than November 1st. So that's what I meant about it being a seasonal game. Kids look forward to this game. Young people, old people, all of us Americans look forward to this game as both spectators, but also as players, especially for kids. It's a game of skill, and it's also a game of luck. It's a rhythmic game. It follows a pattern and a rhythm. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about that rhythm and how it's played. It is interesting for a number of different reasons. So this is kind of not just American Culture 101, but maybe today's subtitle is baseball appreciation. So maybe I can, if I can reach my goal today, maybe I can help you to appreciate baseball. Maybe not make you a fan, but a little appreciation maybe. Okay. So American football is a game that I'm not a fan of American football. But that's a very tightly controlled game in terms of time. So time is very strict in American football. You have to move the ball a certain distance in a very specific amount of time. Failure to move the ball in that short amount of time results in failure of your team to do well. Baseball is the opposite. There's no time frame. There's no clock guiding the play. There's a larger structure, but there's no clock which is ticking down. It's also less violent than American football. American football is a very violent game and is seen by Americans also as a kind of model of warfare and aggression, very violent. Baseball is much less violent, almost no violence, except in some special cases. anger, heartbreak, pain. It's an emotional game. It's not as dependent on a singular skill like international football or what we in the United States call soccer, but it's more of a combined set of skills. So in order to play baseball and to play baseball well, you need to have a combined set of skills that would include, for instance, running ability, speed, agility, which tends even towards gymnastics, fielding accuracy, the ability to catch a ball, as well as the ability to hit the ball. The most basic one is to hit the ball. And hitting the ball has become, over the course of baseball's history, hitting the ball has become more important, and also more power behind hitting the ball has become more important. Something interesting about it is that I grew up playing baseball, like most Americans have some experience playing some form of baseball, and especially boys. So I grew up playing a form which is for mostly for kids, also adults, called softball. Softball has a larger ball. It's a step up from T-ball. T-ball is where the ball is actually placed on a stand. It stands in front of you. So it doesn't move. It doesn't move, and you can just hit it. That's T-ball, where you can just hit it. Softball, still a larger ball, but it's thrown at you by a pitcher, and you have to swing and hit the ball. So we grow up playing this kind of softball, mostly. Baseball is a much smaller ball than the softball, so we tend to think that softball is like baseball, but it's actually very different. And it's actually, we think we can maybe play baseball because we know how to play softball, but baseball is actually much more difficult. It's about baseball today. It has 9 innings, and it's a game played between 2 teams. I had to write this down because it's so obvious that it's like, I wanted to make sure that I, okay. So, 2 teams, at one point the team is either batting, that's also called hitting, or it's in the defense, which is fielding, which also involves pitching. You take a pair of turns, and this pair of turns between which position you're in constitutes 1 inning. We refer to those innings as being in 2 halves, the top and the bottom. And there are 9 of those in regular play. The pitcher throws the ball at the batter, and the batter stands 60 feet away from the pitcher, and sometimes that baseball is traveling 100 miles an hour or even faster. Professional pitchers can throw very rapid pitches. So in order to score, the home team, let's say, for instance, at the top half of the inning, the home team is in the field, the visiting team is at bat, and they have to hit the ball when it enters into what is called the strike zone, which is the area where the ball passes past the batter. And they have to hit this ball, and then they proceed around the bases. This is probably all familiar to you, right? Is any of that totally unfamiliar? No. Okay. Is any of that unclear?
Let's play ball.
So exciting.
Well, most of us have probably caught glimpses of it on TV.
Right.
Here and there, and decided, what is this? And then watched it for a little while and got the idea.
Right.
And then turned it off.
Right.
Switched to another channel.
Right. So yeah, you may switch it off because it may look boring.
But it's far from it.
It's far from boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a shot. So there are restful periods in this game. There are pauses, and then there are fast parts of the game where motion moves very quickly. In fact, this fast motion is considered very American, like we were talking about last week, kind of, and even the week before. This getting things done quickly, making decisions quickly, this kind of American cultural attitude, and the speed of gameplay was actually part of the original design of the game. So, let's see. We have different types of hits that one can make, and different types of where the batter hits the ball. This can have different results. You can have, for instance, a hit which lands the batter on the first base. That's a single. You can have a hit which lands the batter on the second base. It's a double. And third base. It's a triple. Or you can hit the ball and it can go out of the park. That's a beautiful moment when it goes out of the park. And that is called a home run. And then the batter who has just hit the ball can run around all the bases, first, second, third, and then comes home. So this idea of coming home is actually really important to baseball. Baseball is actually a really nostalgic sport because our goal constantly is to return home. So it has this emotional quality built into it. And when you take that seriously, it starts to really mean something. Now, there's also a kind of home run that's called in the park home run. That's where you hit the ball and it doesn't actually physically leave the park, but it goes so far back deep into the outfield that it can't be fielded, it can't be caught, or it's not caught because of an error on the part of the outfielders. In any case, that's referred to as a in-the-park home run. And the reason why we are so excited about the home run, I'll skip ahead a little bit and then come back, but the reason why we're so excited about the home run is because of a baseball player named Babe Ruth. Okay, Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth is an American hero. It's also candy bar. Yes. Yes. But Babe Ruth was a baseball player, and he has a very interesting story, which I'll just kind of skip ahead to and then use that as an example. So Babe Ruth, he grew up in really extreme poverty. Very, very difficult circumstances that he grew up in. And he grew up in Baltimore, which Aijin has been, lived in Baltimore, but she's behind the glass over there. Has anyone else been to Baltimore? It's a rough place, Baltimore. It's not nice in Baltimore. And the part of Baltimore that Babe Ruth was from was also a very poor, lots of crime. He actually grew up in his father's saloon, spending a lot of time behind the bar, where alcohol was being sold and where people were drinking every day, and this little boy was growing up in very harsh circumstances. Very few opportunities economically. In fact, he had so few opportunities as a boy that his family gave him away to an orphanage. His parents were alive. It was that bad. They were that poor that they gave their son away to an orphanage. And so he grew up in an orphanage. And he was also really mistreated physically by other kids. He was a kind of big guy and awkwardly shaped. Kind of proportions were a little strange. Very long arms, strong arms, and kind of a smaller head, a big chest, and smaller legs. Really kind of a weird-looking guy. And so as a kid, he got teased and made fun of all the time and picked on all the time. But the good news is that this orphanage had a baseball team. And he fell in love with this game of baseball in the orphanage, and he started playing, and he started doing exceptionally well. And this was just really the beginning of a very long career for Babe Ruth. And he went on to play for Baltimore, but really where he's famous is for playing with the New York Yankees. And he played with the Yankees from 1920 to 1934, so 14 years. And baseball players, like other sports stars, they have to have a lot of physical skill and a lot of physical ability. And so it's very hard on their bodies, and some of their careers are very short, very, very short. Babe Ruth's career is actually very long in baseball terms, and when you think about the way that he grew up and his house and everything. So he was number three for the Yankees, and the reason I mentioned that he was number three is another American culture 101. Baseball numbers of very famous baseball players, and other sports is true also, those numbers get retired. So there will no longer be a number three. That's Babe Ruth's number. And so we think of that, those two are tied together. And Babe Ruth is really a kind of American hero because baseball is an American sport. He also had this ability to hit these home runs. And he was really the person who brought the powerful hitting of the home runs into the popular culture. And that's really why we even expect baseball players to be able to hit these home runs now. He would also do these tricks, which, for instance, is called Babe Ruth's called shot, where he would point with the baseball bat, where he would point where he was going to put the ball, and then he would hit the ball, and it would actually go wherever he said that he would put it, and that could be 100 feet away. So it's very great distances that he would hit the ball. But he knew sort of how to do that. An incredible player. And he would hit also to the deepest part of the park, to the furthest points, which are the furthest away, which are the most difficult to catch the ball. I'll come back to the difficulties of catching balls, and it'll be especially painful for Mark. okay, so...
I'll try to be strong.
Yes. Yes. So you can see here in Babe Ruth, this American hero for an American sport, you can see how it also, his life story emulates what we talked about last week with not only a kind of rags to riches, but overcoming incredible circumstances through hard work, determination, and just this constant level of effort, and then to really achieve something, you know, in the United States, a level of recognition that is unsurpassed. So it's famous also that during arguments, cross-cultural arguments, or even wars, when Babe Ruth is insulted to Americans, this is one of the most upsetting things that you can do to an American. So the story is that you can insult the Queen to the British, right? This enrages the British, some of them. But if you insult Babe Ruth, that's like insulting an American. Yeah, on the deepest level. Yeah. Because we believe in him also as a kind of model of what we were talking about last week, this ability for someone to overcome, to come from the most desperate circumstances, and to really to demonstrate remarkable ability. And again, through really profound skill. There are some other baseball players who I was going to mention and talk about, just so that you would know a few others of these American heroes. Another player whose name you should know is Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson is a very important baseball player. You know, has a name which is hopefully easy to remember. Has anybody heard of Jackie Robinson before? Okay, yeah. Mark, I can rely on you. Okay. Okay, so, yeah, Jackie Robinson is number 42, and his number 42 is also retired across all major baseball leagues. No team uses number 42 anymore because Jackie Robinson was the first black Major League Baseball player. He was the first African American to play Major League Baseball. And he played for the Brooklyn Dodgers, and his career was from 1947 to 1972. Very, very long career. And an exceptional baseball player, Jackie Robinson. So there had been, prior to Jackie Robinson's crossover into the Major League Baseball, there had been black or African-American leagues. So there had been leagues of players that were black, but they had been they had not been permitted to enter into Major League Baseball. So it's actually a sport which was very racially divided, very very closely divided in that way, and very contentious. Another player who I think you should know about played for the New York Yankees, and his name is Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio, Italian-American ball player, and one of the most amazing things about him was that he had a 56-game hitting streak. So he had... Joe DiMaggio had a run where he had 56 games straight of hitting balls and scoring runs. And it's just amazing.
I don't think anyone's ever broken it.
No one's ever broken it, no.
Does that mean that, what does that mean, like 56 games, like hit a ball?
He got a hit.
He got a hit.
Every
game.
Every single game, he got some type of hit. Non-stop, consecutive.
Wow.
56 straight games.
Steal record.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the closest that came to that was 45 with Pete Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got 45 straight games, and then the next game he didn't get hit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Pete Rose in 1978 came the closest to it, but it's actually still considered an unbeatable record. It's considered almost an inhuman achievement to have been able to...
must have been on something during that.
For 56 games,
yeah,
which is a large part of the season.
But he probably wasn't.
No, no. Although baseball has been plagued with lots of scandals. But no, this one is really just pure athleticism. Joe DiMaggio was able to hit baseballs every time in every game for 56 games straight. Remarkable.
He's also married to Marilyn Monroe.
Also married Yeah, no, I was going to mention that. I think I didn't write this down, but I think it's 274 days married.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's a pretty limited amount of time. But yes, Joe DiMaggio was also married to Marilyn Monroe, and they were yeah. Yeah. Less than a year, though. Yeah, less than a year. Yeah. And his number is number 5. So. Yeah. Okay, so let's see. As these are all again names of men who are stars within baseball. It's not only it's a game not only played by men, also played by women, but it has a very kind of father-son sort of history. It's a kind of game that's passed on from father to son, and it's very famous in that regard. I personally have inherited my love of this game from my mother. Not bad. Yeah. Yeah. That's for mom. Yeah, good old mom. American Pie, mom, baseball. And my mom actually loves sports. My dad's passed away, but he was a musician. My mom really is more the athlete, loves sports, and passed that on to me. She was actually just in town, and Aijin and I spent time with her. We were watching basketball, because it's basketball season right now for March Madness. But my mom, in fact, I mentioned this to Pastor last week, was the coach of my softball team when I was a little boy. I mentioned to Pastor, at the time, I didn't think it was so cool that my mom was the coach. But now I think it's cool, so I thought I should tell you. It's an emotional game, and it's a game that people feel nostalgic about. Every baseball game starts off with the American the anthem, and so it's a patriotic game. It's a game that's about patriotism. It's about the United States. There's a flag waving somewhere. And a green meadow, which is shaped like a diamond with the bases and the American flag and the anthem. And we stand and, you know, we sing the American anthem. And then, as Pastor said, someone says, play ball. And then the ball is thrown out and the game begins. Also, if you're like me, what else happens is if you're into the White Sox here in Chicago, fireworks go off. Chinese, right? Fireworks? That's pretty good, right? So I would recommend that if you like fireworks. Also, whenever the White Sox score, more fireworks. And if they win the whole game, lots more fireworks. So, you know, okay. It is a game which is played, obviously, by teams, which are collective. And last week we talked about the differences culturally between the collective identity and the individual identity. But it's interesting because everyone is a team. You're wearing a uniform on the field. All the players are wearing a uniform. However, it also relies on this American ideal of heroic individuation. This is a really fascinating part of this game. So everyone is a team in a uniform looking fairly identical. However, unlike other games where the team, for instance in American football, where the team has to function as a team, in American baseball, most of the decisions that are made on the field are individual decisions. And it's also thought of as a competition between individuals, because the person who's at bat is in a competition with the person who's pitching the ball. Now, in the larger sense, of course, they all need each other as a team in order to win or to do anything, but they do think of themselves in these very individuated and also heroically individuated, heroic individualism. So this is actually very similar to what we were talking about last week, where they actually are a team, but they have to think as individuals, and they're rewarded for thinking as individuals. That's how they score runs, is by making individual choices and decisions. So that's interesting, I thought. Yes, also because, as I said, they act essentially independently of each other. And the plays themselves are usually a series of solitary acts, solitary actions. Okay. Maybe also most importantly is that it is a collective American experience. It's a game like American sports, born in the United States, also like we were talking about last week, which was born out of a resistance to the British Imperial Project. So, baseball. Baseball is an expression of the resistance to the British Imperial Project, literally speaking. There are two major games that are British that baseball takes its form from. One is a game called Rounders, which was played by people of a lower economic class, usually. Faster paced, less structure, higher points. And another game called cricket, a British game called cricket, usually played by people of a higher social class, economic class. Slower, less points, more refined, more refined. And so baseball is a literal combination of these two games with added features and subtracted features. So they took certain, over time, certain aspects of these two games came together and others were cut away. And what grew out of all of that was a game called baseball. And so baseball also was a part of an American identity. It was part of saying, we're Americans because we don't play cricket, and we don't drink tea, and we play baseball. We drink coffee. We eat American foods like hot dogs.
Apple pie.
Apple pie. It's also it has a history of being defined as an American project, and it is literally tied to the invention of the United States as a country. So it grew up in the United States as the United States grew up as a country. So it has a very close tie to our cultural identity. And also, it's part of our collective American experience because it was a televised sport, and it remains a televised sport. A sport which works really well on television, unless you're easily bored, I suppose. But it also works on the radio, and it was a radio sport as well as a television sport before it was on TV. It was on the radio. So people would listen to the radio broadcasts as soon as that was technologically possible. And that made baseball a shared experience. And it is one of those experiences that we are able to talk about as Americans with each other. I almost wanted to say without it being contentious. Now, that's true. I guess we have some kind of general rules as Americans not to talk about money and politics and religion. But we can talk about baseball. Because it's something that we all share. We all share this experience. Many cities, not all, but many cities have only one major team. This city, however, has two major teams. So actually in Chicago, you can't talk about money or money or politics or religion or baseball. unless you are prepared for what's going to happen. So, there are these two teams. And just to explain to you very quickly, the two teams that we have here are the Chicago Cubs, right? The Chicago Cubs in Wrigleyville, okay? And Wrigley Stadium. Wrigley, like the chewing gum,
right.
Same family. And then, that's on the north side of the city, closer to where we are physically right now, in Evanston. And then on the south side of the city, we've got the White Sox. And so as I told you before, sometimes in these American Culture 101 seminars I've been giving you facts, and other times I've been giving you opinions. So here comes some opinions. So on the one side of the city, we have a baseball team on the north side, the Chicago Cubs, who have a lot of money in their team. They have a lot of resources. You know, it's just that they have this one problem. They can't win baseball games. It's just a little problem. It's just a small one, but they just can't seem to win a baseball game.
Tell them how long.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's over how long are we at?
100 years.
We're over 100 years. Over 100 years.
It's our World Series.
World Series.
Yeah.
World Series. So it's
no.
See, there you go. There you go.
And no matter how much they lose, I just love them.
It's really true. This is really exactly what is wrong with Mark.
I'm watching all the time. The game is on. Somehow I watch the game.
Yeah. On the south side of the city, there is a what's understood by some as a more working class. Kind of rougher neighborhood, less refined stadium, and there's a baseball team there called the Chicago White Sox, and the thing about them is that they know how to win baseball games. So there's a real kind of dilemma in this city. But what's beautiful about both of these baseball teams is that there's something which is really fundamental, again, to American cultural identity, which is this idea of hope. And that there's always next season. And as Mark even said, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. I just love them. I just love the Cubs.
It's hard to explain.
It's hard to explain. But people do. People love this baseball team, even though they have not won a World Series in over 100 years. That's a very long time. From our American perspective, 100 years sounds like forever. so it's not just that though. It's also that the Cubs have there's a real kind of not just patriotism to the United States, but a kind of place patriotism. So you have this kind of north side, city north side about the Cubs, and you have this kind of south side, Chicago, about the Sox. And every year, we have a really wonderful series of games that happens, which is called the Crosstown Classic. Yeah, it's very exciting. And then the Sox come to the north side, and they play the Cubs on the north side, and then the Cubs go to the south side, and they play the Sox on the south side. It's very exciting. And everybody gets really excited about it, and probably more than just excited, you know. Everybody has a lot of hopes for what might happen. And then, of course, everybody sees this as really validating something important about their team, whatever team it is that they believe in. In a few more minutes that I have here, I just wanted to come back to the Cubs. And not just to make Mark feel bad, but but as I mentioned when I started today, baseball is a very superstitious sport, and Chicago is an incredibly superstitious city for baseball. Yes, you are living in a city which has some very profound beliefs about why the Cubs can't win baseball games. Obviously, it's not just that they have failed to. obviously there's another reason, a supernatural reason, and that's called the curse.
Yeah,
it's the curse of the billy goat, which, yeah, it's a profound curse, which apparently has been cast on the Cubs since 1945. So here's what happened. You should know this. Even if you're just visiting here in Chicago to go to school and then you're going to return somewhere else, it's fine. You should just know this about Chicago baseball. So there's this curse that's supposedly, that's on, I find it funny, because that's why I'm laughing, because I'm wearing a White Sox baseball jacket, okay? I don't take this seriously. But Mark does. Okay. So, in 1945, the World Series was being played in Detroit. And the World Series, it's called the World Series even though it was invented in the United States and has mainly been played by Americans.
Very deceiving term.
Okay, yeah. But it's called the World Series. And they were playing Detroit. And Billy Sionis, he came to Game 4 of the World Series, and he runs this famous Chicago landmark, the Billy Goat Tavern. There's this restaurant and bar, and there's a few different locations. It's a famous one. And he bought a ticket for himself to the game, and he also bought a ticket for his Billy Goat. You know, the goats with the beards and the horns, and Billy Goat. So he brought his goat with him to the game to support the Cubs. But people didn't like that he brought his goat. Because it's a goat. And nobody wants that at a baseball game. So they made him leave. It's that simple. They made him leave. And as he's leaving with his goat, he turns and famously turns back and he says, "These Cubs are never going to win a game again." Yeah, it's amazing. And that's the curse. That's the curse of the Billy Goat. And somehow it worked. And they lost that World Series. And they have not really been able to come back since 1945 when that Billy Goat curse was placed on them. And believe it or not, I'm not going to go into these details, but believe it or not, they've had all kinds of public events where all kinds, with all different religions coming in to the, really, to try to get the curse to go away, right? And it's just, they just can't do it, apparently. Yeah.
One thing they haven't tried, though, is a whole new stadium.
They have not tried that, no. Yeah. They haven't. But it almost doesn't matter because they don't need to. Because they have these fans who are these really hardcore fans who don't even care if their hearts are broken year in, year out. They don't mind. They want to love the Cubs. And, you know,
it's totally based on hope alone.
It's all hope. It's just all hope. It's so American.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's so American. It's just improbable hope.
Most other cultures would have totally given up.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. You would think. But not in America, okay, and not in Chicago.
In my house.
Yeah. not at Mark's house. So, and here's one. It's profound because also whether or not we can. I mean, I don't believe it, but whether or not people believe that it's a real curse, the players believe it and the fans believe it, and they really do. They really believe that they are somehow under the weight of this, and so any little thing that goes wrong is the fault of the billy goat curse, right? and let's say things are going right. Let's say they're doing well. Okay, then oh no, right? Like everybody is very excited and looking for, but everybody's really worried because there's still this billy goat curse. And this is precisely what happened. I just have to share this because you're in Chicago. I have to share this with you. In 2003, this remarkable event occurred where the Cubs were doing pretty well. They weren't doing great, but they were doing pretty well. They're doing okay. They're winning games and they're moving up. And so, of course, that's enough for people to just go crazy and be so like, yes, you know, like, we're going to win the whole thing, right? Like, well, your team is doing okay. Don't get ahead of yourself. But everybody's just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so they're doing pretty well. They had gotten to the championships games. And it was 2003, game six of the 2003 championship games. There was a fan named Steve Bartman. Anyone? No. Okay. And Mark's keeping quiet right now, because he was hoping I wouldn't bring this up. But there's a fan named Steve Bartman, and what happened in 2003? So they're doing pretty well. And there's a fly ball that's headed towards the back of the field, outfield, and it's headed towards the stands. And this fan, Steve Bartman, he's a Cubs fan. This is the best part. He's really a Cubs fan. He loves this team, okay? But he's got headphones on and he's listening to the radio while he's physically at the physical game. So he's listening to the radio and he's at the game, and the ball's headed back, and a Cubs player, Aloha, is an outfielder, and he's headed back to catch the ball. And Bartman is listening to this and realizes the ball's coming towards him. So Bartman, as the ball's coming back, and Aloha is the Cubs outfielder who's running back, Aloha's like looking up at the ball, he's got his glove up, and he's about to catch the ball, which would be good for the Cubs. Because then, you know, it'd be good. Bartman reaches out, like over, and grabs the ball. And he actually reaches over the line that separates the fans from the team. He reaches out just over and into, and so he actually catches the ball, and he doesn't allow his own team that he's a fan of to catch the ball. And it, maybe it's a minor thing, but then they all feel like, oh no. and their hearts are broken again. And it's amazing that I was watching this game, and it's amazing because they suddenly, none of them could play baseball anymore. Like, Aloha, the outfielder, turns and looks at Bartman and, like, says some nasty things to him in Spanish, and then Bartman feels terrible but has already caught the ball, and, you know, it can't be undone. And then Bartman has to be escorted by security out. And actually, Bartman like receives all number of death threats. And really, people really, yeah. They're playing against the Florida Marlins. And so, yeah, it was a really crazy moment. And then the next thing that happens is the Florida just like starts winning the game. Because the Cubs just like, they're like, oh no, it's the curse. And they can't play baseball anymore, and so they just lose this game, in this championship game. And they basically, that's it. They can't go any further. This is just amazing. So, I don't know. I had to take my time up here To Bartman?
Yeah.
Oh, Bartman. He like had reached over and he had caught the ball. It could have been ruled that it could have been ruled fan interference. It could have been ruled an invalid play because he had, but it wasn't really 100% clear if he had reached out over the line or not. So what happened to him is that he was under immediate scrutiny. Because it's televised, people like all over Chicago, Cubs fans all over Chicago saw him and mobilized like a lot of anger and feelings towards him. He had to go live with his parents, and then he had to leave Chicago. And he's basically stayed completely silent about it, even now. It's 10 years later. Just a couple of years ago, a documentary was made about it, and a couple of years before that, ESPN wanted to do another documentary about it, and Bartman refuses to be publicly recorded or talk about it, because he's still so afraid of this real hatred that people have for him.
What is his background? Who is he?
Who is he? Yeah, I don't know too much more about him than that.
I don't think he's an evil person.
No, of course not. No, no. Yeah,
it's just,
yeah, it's more of an accident,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
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 By no reason.
No reason. No. No, he was a fan. He was excited. He wanted to catch the ball, because when the ball is hit out into the stands, fans try to catch the ball, and then they can keep it. He just wasn't thinking. So he wanted to catch the ball, but he reached out and he actually took it away from the person who would have caught it, Aloha, for the. He was in his late 20s, early 30s. He's not that young. Not young enough. No. No. Yeah. So, okay. I took a... I just wanted to take a few minutes to tell you that story. I know it's a little bit of a detail-oriented story, but I think it's a funny story. Also points out this kind of belief that people have in this game. So, April 13th, which is a Friday. That's not a good day, but... the Detroit Tigers are playing the White Sox on April 13th, that's the beginning of baseball season this year. So hopefully that goes well. And who knows, maybe it'll go better for the Cubs this year. But yeah,
there's always hope.
The saying is there's always next season, and it's people
that's
say
that's
that.
The saying.
There's always next season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or beautiful.
Because it always is next season.
Yeah. Or beautiful.
Now, what I observe, the Cubs, they are very angry. They have anger.
Yeah.
You have to change the game.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, that's just a little bit about baseball. So.